Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You're about to watch or listen to Rich Tang's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, and I'm going to tell you how you can help us out a bit. It's free, but if you want to subscribe and buy a badge, you can really help us make loads more internet stuff. If you go to gofasterstrike.com/badges, you can make a one-off payment in return for a badge or no badge, or preferably if you could pay like £1 or more a month, you get some amazing things. First, you get a badge that will entitle you to 30 seconds conversation with me in any circumstance. I could be at a funeral, I could be arguing with my wife. You can show that badge, and I promise to give the bearer 30 seconds of my time. You get access to a secret channel of extras with behind-the-scene questions from here, little bits of stuff that's gone wrong, like when we've done adverts for this that have gone wrong. Never happens. And loads of other stuff. Three, you get entered into a monthly draw, which gives away fantastic prizes like signed scripts and junk that I get sent in the mail from other companies and stuff. It's priceless stuff. You can put it on eBay and you'll get like 20 quid or something. And one person a month will get that. And there's only about 1,000 people subscribing. That's much better odds than the National Lottery. Four, you get ticket offers and priority warning about when brilliant guests are coming up, so you can buy tickets to come to the Leicester Square Theatre. And five, your £1 or more a month will pay for more internet comedy. None of that money comes to us. It all goes back into making more Rahelestapers. Rahelestaper. And we're hoping to make a monthly AA Ottima. And whatever else we can afford to do. If you all gave £1 a month, we could be making some fantastic stuff. It's up to you. If you like this stuff, you can give money. If you don't have to. Just tell your friends about it if you like, and maybe they'll give money because they're not tight pricks like you. Thanks for watching. Hope you enjoy the podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who is the pick and mix Robin Hood. It is Richard Herring. Thanks for coming. You're much better than last week's audience. So welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as some really cool people just started calling it, Rahelestapur. It's been a fun week. Let's see what I've been up to this week in my Slytherin notebook. This is my auntie J.K. Rowling Slytherin notebook. She hates it. I've bought this. There's been all sorts of stuff going on. We've got a fantastic guest, Andy Zoltzman, coming up. David Cameron, well, this is not for you people at home, this is going out quite late. David Cameron has been hit by a jogger today, which, in a week where the Canadian Parliament has been attacked by a man with a machine gun, that's pretty lax. Oh, well, no, the thing is, David, he was running, so we couldn't... How could we stop him getting to you? There was no way. So good to know. It's a shame he just bumped into him, but that is a warning. I'm kind of fascinated by... we might talk to our guests about this, but I'm sort of... I keep coming up with great terrorist atrocities myself, and then I feel it's my duty to tell the world what they are so that will stop terrorists doing them, as long as, like, the security services listen to this podcast. Because I know that Al-Qaeda and ISIS do listen to this podcast for ideas. I've got a good idea for you. Don't do this. But if you're going to do one anyway, do this. Because you know I take liquids on planes, because they can make explosives out of those. What I thought when I was getting on the plane the other day is, why don't they make the explosives into Barocca tablets and put them in a tube of Barocca, and then they can add water on the... Can't they? It's a fucking good idea. I've got to tell you, I'd be a brilliant terrorist. I mean, the thing is, I don't really want to kill loads of people, but I like the invention that comes along with that. And talking to terrorist atrocities, I was in Brighton this week doing a gig, and I was sharing a theatre, seriously, with Margaret Thatcher, which was a surprise. The dressing room next to mine, Margaret Thatcher was in. She's doing like a cabaret act for... sort of slightly camp cabaret act now with dancing men and stuff in it. And at the end of my show, I said, I can only do an hour long show because I'm sharing the theatre with Margaret Thatcher, which is unexpected in Brighton. That's unexpected, I only have to be lucky once, which was my favourite thing. I mean, again, I'm against terrorists. I don't want you going away from this thinking Rich Herring is trying to help terrorists and likes terrorists. I don't. I think terrorism is wrong. But that's what the IRA... When they tried to blow up Margaret Thatcher and they didn't blow her up, they got Norman... Do you remember old Norman Tebbit? He's all right and he's still all right. So he's still having to go at the poor. even now. The IRA said, you were lucky this time, we only have to be lucky once. Which I think is the coolest thing a terrorist has ever said. I mean, that's really... And they weren't. And then I did make the point in the show, Margaret Thatcher happily lived into her old age and happily got Alzheimer's disease and didn't get killed by the IRA, didn't she? So 1-0 to Margaret Thatcher. That is, they couldn't even kill an old woman with Alzheimer's disease. That's how rubbish the IRA are. So it's an anti-terrorism message there. You can relax. You're confused, aren't you? Because I don't really like Margaret Thatcher, but I'm not sure I like the IRA either. I don't know who is the victim of this. Is he pro-Margaret Thatcher? It's difficult to know. When I was on the train to Brighton, there was a man, and this happens a lot on public transport, but usually it's kids. There was a guy with his mobile phone playing his music without headphones, just playing it. And he was like a grown man. And everyone was looking at each other going, and it was, it was quite a tough looking guy who's obviously trying to intimidate people. I just thought it was pathetic. So I turned around to him and said, can you put your headphones on, please? I thought I'd be the guy. I thought I'd give it a go. And I was obviously worried about being pummeled in the face, because that's really why he was doing it, right? So that's your suspicion, is they want an excuse to hit you. But he kind of went, oh, no, well, sorry, someone stole my headphones. I wanted to say, well, that's not really my problem, is it? That's your... Doesn't mean you can start playing. You've got to buy some new headphones and then you can... And then he said, can I borrow your headphones? And I said, that's not how... I'm not going to give you my headphones. And then you've got your stranger earwax in them. I'm not into that. And then he was playing. He said, luckily, it's a good song, so it's good. But I didn't agree with him. I like the smell of my own farts, but I'm not... That doesn't mean I'm going to fart in a train carriage. That's not entirely true. I don't always like the smell of my... The ones I'm doing this week are disgusting. I only like them on the level that they're so bad that it's kind of hard to believe that's come out of a human body. At the moment, you might smell one later, you're in the front row. That's touch and go. Also, I do sometimes fart on the train, so that it wasn't a good analogy. Usually by accident. Sometimes just, people have got my nerves. You think, this will teach them. And unlike the music playing, though, the good thing about farting on a train is it's... Because the music, it's just an annoyance, but with a fart, it's like a little whodunit mystery for the other passengers, isn't it? So that's... I see that as a little gift. Looking around... Because when I try to work out who it was, when I know... If it's me, I know it was me, usually. But often I don't. Anyway, It's time to welcome this week's guest. You'll be very excited to see me. It's my second favourite comedian, whose name is Andy Something Man. The other one, my favourite is Andy Kaufman, which is, he's one of the best comedians in the world, so that's not bad. But if your name's Andy Something Man, you've got to feel bad that you're not the favourite comedian with that name. And he's best remembered, of course, you will know him from his appearance on episode 5 of Never Mind the Full Stops. Not Never Mind the Buzzcocks, Never Mind the Full Stops, the grammar-based quiz show hosted by Julian Fellowes, who went on to write Downton Abbey. You're all like reacting like you don't know what that is. That's the... because that is what he is best known for. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Andy Zaltzman. Bring him up. Andy Zaltzman. There he is. Hello. Welcome. Pick up a microphone. That will make it easier. We've both gone for quite loud shirts this week. I was worried that mine might strobe. Then I saw what you were wearing. I thought, oh, well.
Right. Well, I heard you were going to go with just a simple kind of blue and white stripe. I thought, I can trump that. I had my spies in your wardrobe,
which is good to know. Do you remember much about the... We'll get out of the way because you get asked this all the time.
Yeah.
Do you remember much about your appearance on Never Mind the Full Stops? Mind the Buzzcocks, Never Mind the Full Stops.
Well,
that's the clever thing about it.
I remember thinking that there was no way that a panel show about grammar and punctuation was not going to be the biggest TV hit in the history of human creativity. What I remember most really is just for about a year and a half afterwards, I could barely leave the house without just like loads of paparazzi giving me shit. So, you've brought up some pretty harrowing memories, to be honest.
Did you find... Is this Julian Fellowes? That's his name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did you find him an unbearable prig?
Well, I only spent about, 40 minutes.
Was that not enough?
I don't know. It did leave me with the suspicion that he might have that club in his bag.
He's... I did that show as well. At the end, I just... when we were doing retakes... I just, because it's like being told off by a teacher and you go, oh, God, it's quite hard anyway. And I didn't think I know about punctuation.
Yep.
And then we were doing one of the retakes and he said something and I just went, oh, fuck off. And everyone really laughed in the audience, making me suspect that they didn't like him either.
Right. And that's why you've never been cast in Downton Abbey.
It is. Would you think you and I would be above stairs or below stairs and down there, or in the, buried in the stairs?
Yeah, under the literal skeletons in the cupboard.
I went to the Tower of London this week. Funnily enough, I saw the spot where the Richard and Edward is that right? Have I got that right, nerds? Richard and Edward the Fifth and Richard, some prince. Where they were buried.
Right.
Probably them.
Right. Not where they were holed up in. In a wall or whatever.
They were under some stairs. Yes, there's a little, they show you where it was, where the bodies were found. They found two little boy skeletons in a box.
Right. Is it still like cordoned off with police tape?
With chalk.
I mean, it's still an open crime, isn't it? Yeah. On the police books. I mean, who did it? Did any of you do it? Did any?
anyway,
it's never too late to solve a crime, even.
I reckon
that was an old Muddy Waters song, I think.
So let's have a look at what's been going on. I looked up, let's get this out of the way. Every week I look at Dirty Britcom Confessions,
right,
where people, comedy fans, give their sexual fantasies about various comedians. Have you seen this website?
No, I haven't.
No.
And I'm very pleased that I've.
Kind of went in with some trepidation with you because I imagined
the kind of person. Find anything there?
There weren't any, which I was glad about, but which is. It's, I don't know if that's insulting or whether the people respect you so much they can't think of you in a sexual way.
I don't know, man. That's what my wife says. So.
Though I did tweet about it, and people suggested they suggested it will start with I would like to get a cricket bat and so.
Right.
But your sister,
yep,
tweeted and was quite pleased there wasn't anything.
Oh well,
about
that's
you there.
I'm pleased. I believe my career has now been worthwhile. I've avoided appearing on that.
Yeah.
That.
But if anyone wants to put one on there for Andy, it's quite rude that he's not on there. Yeah. But you are the second Zaltzman to appear on Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, as your sister,
yep,
Helen appeared. Do you think any of the rest of your family could get on? Would your gran be any good on here?
If you raise the fee for it, then I'm reckon they'll all be interested.
Yeah.
You could try my dad.
Yeah,
he's a sculptor.
Yeah, he's a sculptor.
He's a very funny man. When my sister got married, I don't know if she talked about this on your podcast, he gave an incredible Father of the Bride speech. Now, traditionally, the Father of the Bride speech is quite moving, quite serious, you know, touching expression of what the daughter means to the father. My father went with 10 minutes of puns, which... and I think it was probably the highlight of his life, judging by the look on his face. And I'm sure he was wearing this quite plump bow tie, and I'm sure it grew during the course of this speech.
Were there puns about your sister, or were they just his favourite puns?
There were some in which he managed to crowbar and mention my sister in, but...
I once saw someone do a Father of the Bride speech where he'd literally just printed some jokes off the internet that weren't connected, really, even to marriage. I mean, they were very... They were certainly connected to his daughter, and, you know, so he would go, well... Parsimony, that's something you need if you're married. And then there would be a bon mot from...
Right.
It wasn't about
that's
parsimony.
That's how I write an Edinburgh show.
Is it? Yeah. But that's all right, an Edinburgh show, because that's not all that important. But the Father of the Bride speech, you're hoping for some moment of, I quite like my... You know, in the end of the day, I quite like my daughter. I'm glad she's married. Even that at the end of some jokes printed off the internet would be...
Yeah, it's just hard to get a setup that fits in with that particular punchline, isn't it?
So I'm quite interested in art. Is the artistic gene passed down to you?
No, it's entirely sidestepped.
Has it?
like a Fijian rugby player. It's I would say negative artistic skill.
Yeah.
Whereas my sister's quite a gifted artist.
Right.
I am currently, I think, marginally worse than my two children, who are aged 7 and 5. I think they've already overtaken me.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm just disastrous with a pencil.
Because I keep on coming up with conceptual art that I think could win the Turner Prize.
Like what?
Well, I've talked about it, but there's the thing where I realised if I'd kept all the pairs of shoes I'd ever had in my life from a baby till I died,
right,
and then just placed them in a row,
you'd look like a closet Nazi. I don't know.
No, that would be an amazing.
Not for the first time, Richard.
They'd be my own shoes.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
I haven't killed anyone to get this
apart
display.
Apart from yourself.
Well, eventually I'll be dead. Yeah. I wouldn't display it until I was dead, and it'd be every pair of shoes, and it would show, the absence of yourself from those shoes, is quite evocative,
as you've
spotted straight away, but also the way those tiny booties grow into children's shoes, into adult shoes. Then I think the way also your shoes, as you get older, would be more similar, and probably... Some shoes would be, you know, you use a lot and they're worn out, and some you hardly ever wore.
Yeah.
And then I think your taste towards the end of your life would become more and more similar.
Right.
So I think it would tell a lot about the human condition to do that. And if you had a lot of them, you could call it Walk a Mile in My Shoes, and it could be like a mile long.
You've thought about this far too hard.
I want to win the Turner Prize.
So well, I think I'd do something similar, but only with pogo sticks. And I don't know.
How many pogo sticks have you had in your life?
I've used one.
Yeah.
But starting that work of art would encourage me to bounce more than I have previously. And that has to be good at, you know.
Well, that just... could be a companion piece. Richard Herring's shoes and Andy Zossman's one
one poke. But in many ways, it would be an expression both of hope, but also of failure.
Yeah.
And, you know, what greater work of art could there possibly be?
And if you died falling off a pogo stick, you could have bought a pogo stick as an adult now, you probably would kill yourself if you had a go on it, really, realistically.
Well, that's possible. I mean, maybe you could incorporate the pogo stick into one of your hypothetical terrorist atrocities. I don't know. A pogo stick is generally viewed as a symbol of peace.
Yeah.
But maybe...
Well, it has that spring element. Hey, the element of surprise to jump over something to get, like the David Cameron man could have jumped over the security guards, and they would have, if they can't even cope with someone running.
Yeah.
Imagine if that person is running and then bouncing. They're going, and then bang.
Yeah.
Or you could bounce underneath the plane as it's taking off, stick a bomb on the bottom of it, bounce away. So the pogo stick might be a very good... And people would see you on a pogo stick.
And they think and he poses no threat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because I do a bit about a sombrero in my current show.
Right.
If someone's wearing a sombrero, you kind of think, oh, they're good fun and a laugh.
Right.
But I basically saw a mentally ill man wearing a sombrero who turned quite crazy and threatening. But, you know, so you are... And right. Even when he was doing it, you're still laughing because of the sombrero. Because of the sombrero, it means if someone runs David Cameron wearing a sombrero, he's going to go, oh, the Bullingdon Club started up again, here we go. It's all going to be fun. Really?
That's horrible to think of the sombrero sullied.
Yeah, exactly. Do you spend a lot of time thinking up terrorist atrocities?
Well, I haven't to date, but having listened to bit on it, I came up with
one they used, basically. I saw a woman...
Right.
Wearing.
At what point did you do that?
I saw a woman. It's the Trojan woman. It nearly is. I saw a woman at an airport who was quite well endowed, breast wise.
Right.
And then I thought, you could just, you know.
I'm glad you clarified that well endowed.
She didn't have a massive.
She didn't have a lot of financial endowments. I don't know.
And I thought, you know, there's enough. You know, if you're not allowed to take 100 millilitres onto the plane, there's enough within a good sized breast.
Right.
If you were to put.
You're saying Bin Laden was a tit man more than a leg man? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying if he had been, he could have brought down more plane. Because you could put in. You could put in, which they apparently are doing, you can put in like a little pack in there, couldn't you? And then. Yeah. So, right. And the pants.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Pants bomb. I've thought of quite a few.
Yes.
I see that as my. There must be people whose job it is to sit and think about what possible terrorist atrocities there could be.
Yeah, they mostly work for American TV shows.
Yeah. Well, I think you should think more about that.
That was a line 24 never took in 8 series, was it? The giant explosive tits.
No.
But you could have put inside. Jack Bauer in a difficult spot, I think.
You couldn't. No one's going to like. You can't. You know, you're feeling
no,
around.
Well,
aren't
it's
you?
Not politically
you can't
correct.
Go, well, let me just feel that to see.
Thank you, Brussels.
To see if what I think, and even then it would say even a false breast feels like it probably feels it's the same stuff probably. I don't know, I haven't gone around, I haven't taken it that far that I've done this an experiment in the laboratory to discover that fact yet.
Right. Well, that's why you're not a terrorist. You haven't made that crucial last step.
But it's the kind of same thing I suppose in World War II about the Great Escape, the people trying to escape from places.
Yeah.
That they there's people sitting there trying to think of.
Yeah,
like
that was mostly gymnastics based in those days.
Well, a pogo stick would be very useful in that.
Yeah, pommel horses.
That's why I think the Nazi guards probably saw through the pogo stick.
Well, didn't it start? It was a military thing, wasn't it?
The pogo stick.
The siege of Mafeking was. But people disguised as little impalas bouncing around the landscape. I believe. I'm a bit out of the loop.
I think you would have been good in Colditz.
Oh, right.
I don't want you to be put in Colditz. I think you would have. But that's, you're that kind of guy who would sit there coming up with ideas to have, how to escape.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a natural coward, though, as well. Yeah.
But that's good, but you could be the ideas guy. Even if you didn't have any, just the way you look, I think if you had that guy
I
in
could
the
could have been the decoy ideas guy. So everyone would have thought I was the ideas guy. In fact, I was just sitting in the corner whimpering and asking to see my mother. But, you know, that's a good cover.
Good. Well, I'll bear that in mind. If
only you'd been around to suggest that in Colditz.
Yeah.
I think you'd have been great in Colditz as well, suggesting who could be the ideas guy. But then you're getting too many levels of admin in. That can really destroy an escape plan. Just leave a trail of paperwork behind.
So you do the Bugle podcast with John Oliver. What's it like working in a double act where the other one goes on to be a lot more successful?
Absolutely no idea, Richard.
At least he still works with you. He's nice and he still does the podcast with you.
Yes.
That's what a nice double act partner would do.
Although he did put a literal ocean between us.
Because we worked together, we did a gig back in about 2000, it must be 2004, maybe 2000, yeah, 2004 I think it was, 2003. We're at Aldershot, which sticks in the mind, where you and John were previewing your Edinburgh show and I was previewing my Edinburgh show.
Yeah.
It didn't go particularly
well.
No,
I think we both took fairly heavy enemy fire on that.
Well, almost literally.
Yes.
It was Aldershot and there was some squaddies in who were expecting a night of, you know,
comedy,
some jokes. Yes.
That is most assuredly what they did not get.
And you and John were in the quite early stages of your show,
yes,
your political satire show,
yes,
and did an hour,
yes,
and they were still booing you when I came on
after a 20-minute interval, yeah. Yeah.
And then I came on and did a show about me doing, well, about Greek gods and Hercules. And
yeah,
as I began, in 2 minutes in, you know, within 30 seconds, someone went, oh, God, not another one.
So we were very much the John the Baptist to your Jesus of failure,
yeah,
I suppose.
And in fact, I said to these guys, you're not going to enjoy my set. I will give you your money back if you will leave now, because you're really not going to enjoy it. He went, no, don't you judge me. I might enjoy it. Don't you judge me. I'm going to... And then 2 minutes later, he left, and I said, see, you know, you could have had your money back if you left 120 seconds ago, but, you know, I'm not giving you money now. And then he came to the stage and stood to me nose to nose and was sort of shouting at me.
Yeah.
But I had the kind of false confidence of being on stage. This was genuinely like a squaddie who might have been in the SAS in Aldershot, who could have killed me with his just...
Yeah.
But I sort of fronted him out.
Right. I mean, he would have got in trouble for that, I think.
No. I'm not sure. We were that,
I mean, it's
bad.
It's not an official... Yeah. I guess, I mean, it's very hard legally to define when a failed gig becomes a hostage situation.
Punishable by death.
Yeah.
I reckon if a guy who was... If he was in the SAS and some secret services,
yeah,
and he killed a comedian...
We've all done it.
I think they would have hushed it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, they would have got away with it. It's basically, yeah, what happened in episode one or two of Homeland series.
Well, they bumped off a stand-up, didn't
they?
Well,
no, a guy got annoyed with some blokes in the bar taking the piss out of his plump girlfriend.
Right, and then took out a hit on Russ Abbott.
he beat them up, but then basically just, you know, he's high up enough that I've let him go. Mind you, I don't know if Homeland is a true story. I'm not sure. Could happen. That is the terrifying thing. What is it like? Are you happy for John Oliver's success, or do you wish that was you in The Love Guru?
Well, I mean, obviously, The Love Guru is very much his artistic high point. I don't know if you're aware, it was a film, it was a Mike Myers film that...
That no one has heard of, makes it really best.
I believe it didn't smash too many box office records, apart from maybe most people demanding a refund. I don't know if I can't think he...
You know what Mike
that.
Myers should have done with that? Should have put a Shrek in it. So... because Mike Myers plays Shrek... was a brilliant joke. It's the only one of the series. That's the only one you get. I had the opportunity with Steve Coogan when they had Jackie Chan. I thought people were going, he's going to go. They put Jackie Chan in and then Around the World in 80 Days. I should have said, you know what they should have done, Steve? They should have put a Shrek in it. That's why I didn't do it. Because I had too much respect for the audience. Apparently don't even know. There's a lot of newer people who don't know the old catchphrases. if you could swap places with John Oliver, would you swap lives with him in a kind of vice versa?
Well,
way?
I mean, that would be awkward on a personal level. I mean, I'm not sure how good he is with children. And he's got a dog.
Yeah, you don't like dogs.
Well, I quite like dogs, but I can't really be asked to take them for a walk every day, so
yeah.
I think we'd probably both get in trouble on that front. I think if I swap places with John Oliver, then his show would be cancelled pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'll give you that. So I'll give you that. We'll move. He doesn't like talking about John Oliver. Let's move. I can sense it. It's another Stephen Merchant moment coming up. So you like sport.
I do like sport.
That's weird.
Why is that weird, Richard?
What's that about? Why would you like sport?
Well, it's better than reality.
Okay.
Reality is just a constant series of letdowns. Whereas sport at least offers a hope of a brighter world.
Not if you support York City, it doesn't.
That sport. Again, we're in the awkward semantics, aren't we?
Yeah.
At what point does lower league football just become legalised violence? I mean, it's... The courts have never adequately ruled on that, I don't believe.
And what is it about cricket that you enjoy so much?
Well, cricket, I particularly enjoy the fact that, you know, with a test match you get essentially carte blanche to clock off from real life, family, work and news for 5 entire days. Or if India are playing 2.5 entire days. So I think it's that escape into a, you know, the sinuous narratives of an unfolding sporting drama. But it's, well, that's better than seeing the latest speech by Ed Miliband, isn't it, surely? Even people who hate cricket would rather watch Alistair Cook scoring 10 in 4 hours than listen to Ed Miliband read an erotic novel. I think
I'm not sure Ed Miliband is the benchmark by which everything should be judged. Because in that case, nearly everything is better than...
Yeah.
Child murder is preferable to that, so... My audience are very easily shockable this week. I better pull back a little bit on the... I like... But you do commentary and... I like that. The side of sport I like is the statistics.
Yes.
And commentary. I love commentating on things.
Yes.
I think comedy and sport kind of... There's not been enough comedy and sport crossover, I think.
No,
people take sport very seriously.
Well, they are two sides of the bullshit coin, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, they should dance in... bullshit harmony. Yeah.
Because I like commentate on annoying. I think QPR have got onto this, what I do, because most football matches are on Saturday, sometimes Sunday. QPR this week are playing on a Monday night at the same time as this podcast, because they know what I like to do. I live near Loftus Road and I like to commentate via Twitter on the QPR matches
based on
the sound
alone. Right.
and work out what the score is and work out what's just happened.
Right.
And then that is the score, whatever is the real score. And I think all games should be played like that, or certainly all commentary should be done like that.
Yes. It would make the Robbie Savage a much more interesting man, I think, if punditry was done. Have you tried it with other sports, though, like chess?
I haven't.
Just based on the crowd noise, I don't know.
I could give it a go. I don't know that much about chess, but I could... I don't know that much about football, to be honest. But
no.
I do know the sounds that people make when... I can tell, you can distinguish an ironic cheer from a real cheer quite easily.
Yes.
So you know the difference between a goal and someone really fucking up quite badly.
Yeah. Well, I guess that goes back to our primeval roots. It was when cavemen learned to tell the difference between one of their family being eaten by a dinosaur or tripping over a saber-toothed tiger. I don't know. Basically the same thought processes, I think.
And are you a fan of snooker? Because I play myself at snooker in my basement and then do an audio commentary of that, which I put out for the public to enjoy.
Are there any psychologists in the room who'd like to analyse that sentence?
When you were a kid and if you played, did you have your own snooker table?
Yeah, we did. We had a 6x3 foot snooker table, which is the default size of 1980s snooker tables for people who had a house that wasn't big enough to have a massive, great elephant.
Did it go on top of a table or did it have
No, legs? It was its own table. It was very much itself, but the pockets were slightly too small.
Ah.
It was really hard to get the balls in, so quite often I would play without a cue ball and just like build a break by knocking the ball straight into the pocket and fantasise about being the new Steve Davis. Happy days. It's good to allow yourself some successes by hitting a ball directly into a pocket and pretending it was a good shot. And my positional play, to be fair, was outstanding.
Very hard to snooker anyone.
Yeah, that's right.
It becomes just what do you call that game?
Just
there's
always
no snookers in it.
Always in position for the next shot. It's like a young Ronnie O'Sullivan, but more so.
And did you ever play yourself and commentate on the games against two different?
I don't think.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know.
Why
I definitely did play myself at snooker, but I don't remember. I don't remember the commentary. Have you tried doing the same with boxing? You tried fighting yourself?
I haven't yet.
I mean, that's just a standard Friday night out in some cities in England.
I've tried running, but I can't. I can do it. I do like half marathons and things.
Yeah.
But I've done it in a way that each run I do is alternates between the two. So I ran a half marathon a few weeks ago. But in the training, me one ran and then me two ran. And then the selectors decided which one would run the actual race. I considered changing halfway between the two, but I felt that would be cheating.
Yeah, you're only letting down the competition.
Yeah, so me too ran and was excellent. The selectors did well.
And was there a bit of resentment from me wondering I could have done equally as well?
Or? No, as we were going round...
Grudging respect.
There was grudging respect. Oh, that's good. He had tried to sabotage, I think, all the way through the training process. And subconsciously. Well, I was at the start line of the... I mean, it's a bit Fight Club, this, but I think this might be the case. Because I don't remember doing this. Right. I was at the start line, and it's in the Royal Parks, and everything was cordoned off, and all the runners were behind us, and we were at the start line doing the celebrity photo shoot,
right,
which I didn't know who any of the other people were. I wasn't sure who I was, clearly. A man came out of nowhere on a Boris bike, cycled up behind us and kind of hit me and the woman next to us, quite it's confusing, quite hard. And I thought maybe me one had paid a hitman, sort of David Cameron style hitman,
right,
to take me out of the race.
Literal hitman.
So that he could then take the place of me too, who's
kind of
too
injured. This is the new Nancy Kerrigan, Tonya Harding type, isn't it? Being nobbled by yourself.
So I think maybe I arranged, subconsciously, without me one, I arranged that so that I out of spite or in the hope of taking the position.
Right.
But I don't think me one realised if he broke me two's leg, it would still be hard for me one to do the race.
Right. I can see this simmering resentment, really.
Yeah. But by the end, genuinely, he was there going, yeah, no, fair enough.
The best man.
It was the correct choice.
Like Tom Cruise and the other one in Top Gun at the end, was it? Was me one saying you can be my wingman anytime?
Yeah, it was. But me one will get his chance next year.
Easy for the selectors to say that, but there must be doubts thinking my time has gone as a top level athlete. With all due respect.
Well, we'll see. You know, it is. You're right. It has to be over. So I'll ask you an emergency question, just because the talk of me one versus me two seems to have destroyed the atmosphere. For if you had to choose between dating a man, there's two people you can choose to date, and these are the two people.
Right.
Imagine you're not married, or that your wife has died. If you had to imagine that, you got over it. You're mainly over it.
I'm back in the game.
You're never going to be completely over it, aren't you?
Right.
But you're mainly, you're kind of most of the time over it. And then you decide about...
You just brought it all back.
You had to get... you're back on the dating wheel and you had
She's
to choose...
She's not dead, is she?
No, she's all right.
All right.
She's all right. Man enjoying that. If you had to choose between dating a man who was a 6-foot penis with a face... Right. So he's literally no testicles, just a penis. Right. Everything. He hasn't got any arms. But he has a face. So it's something, you could kiss his face and his mouth.
That's Norman Tebbit, wasn't it?
It could be. There are a lot of politicians do look like that when you see it. If you just take off the shoulders, there's quite a lot of no neck people who basically look like that, with just a little face. You might have, you could have a wig like your hair on there.
Right.
That wouldn't be too weird.
Okay.
Or a man who is normal man, except instead of a penis, he has a tiny man. Who is... Right. The balls are still there, but the man is, his feet are down, so he's like that, and he's facing to. Someone asked on Twitter which way is the man facing, which has not been addressed. The man is facing the little tiny man is facing the man.
Right.
So if you looked at it, so I think if it was that way around, it would just be too strange.
Right.
You'd just be looking at your own penis and the bum of the.
Right.
Your eyes would be drawn to the bum of the man. Right. But he's that way around, so you can if you imagine it was your own penis, you could look at his face, go hello, and you go hello, how you doing? I'm not saying my penis is that wide. That's just I'm just using that as
It's one of the ultimate philosophical quandaries, isn't it? I believe Soren Kierkegaard wrote about it at length.
Yeah. Would you prefer? And do you have any subsidiary
in terms of
questions?
Dating, I'd definitely go for the man with the human penis.
Yeah.
Rather than the human penis man.
Okay.
Because, it's dating, isn't it? We don't know if it's going to even reach the sexual level. So, just go and have a nice meal. Then you're just having a nice meal. You can probably ignore the fact that the man... You probably wouldn't even... How would I know? I mean, as he said on his dating profile, my penis is a small man. In which case...
It might be a giveaway when just every now and again there's a tiny... He was going, let me out. Right. Give me some... I want something to eat.
Well, that's something to talk about, isn't it? I mean, he'd probably console me about my ongoing grief about my late wife.
why you are now dating
men. But, you know, is this an online dating thing? Or not?
Well,
because if someone has put on a profile picture who is a 6-foot penis,
yeah,
that doesn't look anything like a 6-foot penis, then I think you have... You probably have some kind of legal right of complaint, don't you?
I think you could make yourself... Because I think... I got this because the Mark Reckless and the other guy, the Tory guys, both to me look quite like...
a 6-foot penis.
Brooks. Right. When you looked at their... They were kind of both sort of balding, so you could imagine, and then just their heads went down into their bodies. And if you took off... If they took off their suit and it was revealed those shoulders were just false shoulders, and then it just went straight down... So those men, you know, you could put a picture of Brooks Newmark's face on a dating profile. I mean, it would put you off going on a date with him because it's his horrible face. And I think he'd be suspicious about going on a dating website now after all that happened. He's the guy who, you know, the girl pretended, the journalist pretended to be a girl.
Well, I think if you did hook up with someone on a dating website, you did turn out to be a 6-foot penis.
Yeah.
Then... Probably you'd realise that the reason they were dating was just for some company rather than...
Yeah.
I don't think they'd actually be looking for a sexual relationship. So I think, in many ways, that would be fine as well. You've got to be open-minded about these things, particularly when you've been unexpectedly widowed.
I'm not saying you couldn't do better than a 6-foot penis. Right. I'm not saying that that's... If you're single again, that's all you're going to... Those are your only two options. Right. You might have 3 or 4, you know, you might have someone...
Right, who's got two arms that are penises and two legs that are massive nuts. Yeah. Let's not rule that out, Richard. Who knows?
I should write that down.
Life throws us many curveballs.
And if you were dying, which celebrity would you like to stroke your head and face as you died? Right. Is there a celebrity you would...
Oh, wow. I think David Attenborough.
Yeah, he'd be nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
That'd be nice.
Well, I mean, he's seen a lot of... I mean, he's basically made an entire career out of zebra snuff movies and insect porn. Death would hold no fears for Attenborough. He's basically immortal as well, isn't he? I mean, he's looked 90 for the last 40 years. As far as I can tell.
He's doing very well.
Nation's unofficial granddad.
He is. It would be. That would be very comforting. That would be very nice. Yeah. I think I went for Bouncer from Neighbours. I don't know why.
Would he not lick your face? Possibly hump your dying leg.
Something. You know, that's the last moments on earth. I often think about that.
Did he do that to Jim Robinson when he had his heart attack?
Behind the sofa. He died. Who would have thought? I know. If anyone out of Jim Robinson or Bouncer would go on to have a massive Hollywood career, I would have gone for Bouncer. Who would have believed Jim Robinson would have all the stuff he went on to?
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing. So you're on tour at the moment, up against 109 other comedians on tour.
I'm easily the best of them. Yeah.
And it's a satirist for hire.
Yes.
And are you making up a new show every night?
Well, not entirely, but people are emailing me in the issues they want me to address at the show they're coming to. So I've had to satirise to order issues ranging from the situation with ISIS in the Middle East, and you know, I'm not a fan of ISIS at all. I find them at best aggressive conversationalists. And obviously I had a lot of Scottish referendum stuff during the Edinburgh Fringe, stuff about the state of British democracy. From that, going to people emailing and saying, please could you satirise all 719 Pokemon characters individually? Or it's my mate's birthday, can you take the piss out of him? So it's a full range, the full gamut.
And do you think, you'd mentioned there, you touched on the state of the democracy we're in at the moment, and Russell Brand is putting himself up as a sort of Jesus figure.
Yeah, he's sort of a cross between Jesus and Lloyd George, I think.
Do you fancy throwing your hat into the ring against... I sort of wonder whether a kind of parliament of comedians might be the solution, just for one sitting.
For one 5-year sitting, or just one day?
Well, I think probably we get it done in a year. I think comedians would be good, because it'd be a lot funnier.
Yep.
Well, the jokes would be better.
Marginally.
But I think also there's 3 or 4 things that just need to be done, and then we could give it back. I think proportional representation, comedians would bring that in. I think we'd knock down...
Why?
Just because it makes more sense to do that in the current.
But will they bring it in a funny way? Would there be some like comic twist at the end?
I think you would find the comedians would just, they would mess around for a bit, and they would, you know, be Russell Brand and use the opportunity to self-promote their books for a bit. and then they go, hey, should we just get this sorted out? And I think we'd do it quite quickly. I think most comedians are quite sensible, you know, down to it, most of them, underneath. So they've done about four, you know, I think build a new parliament.
Yeah.
That needs doing.
Yeah, wireless. Got to make it wireless this time. Yeah. Too many wires in the current parliament.
I think what would be good, just having a parliament that has enough room for everyone to sit down. Yeah. I think that would be a good thing to do. Well, so I'd knock down, blow up the Houses of Parliament on November the 5th.
Just for old time's sake.
Yeah, people would pay to see that. And you'd probably raise enough money from that to pay off the national debt and everything.
What do you think you'd sell the TV rights for that? Well, this is another one of your terrorist atrocities.
It would be good. Well, if it made enough money, I think, you know, worldwide, the American market would pay a lot for that, wouldn't they? Especially people dressed up as Ian Gunpowder, as I call him, Guy Fawkes. If they played the whole thing out and then it was all blown up with people in period costume, maybe the all cast of Downton Abbey sitting in the House of Lords as it goes up.
But that's basically already happening, isn't it? The House of Lords?
Yes.
There's definitely something to be said for blowing up Parliament for money.
Yeah, and then building a new Parliament that's, you know, modern and just...
Where would you build it? London, or what do you want to put
Strasbourg. Just to piss off Nigel Farage and make his commute easier.
Well, maybe we could, rather than blowing up the current parliament, just sell it to the EU and they could move from Strasbourg to here.
That could work. Well, I don't know. I think. What do you think of Russell Brand? Are you enjoying his foray into politics?
I am. Yeah, I think he's been very entertaining. he wants to. I've done a gig that you've done many times, Political Animal, where I host it and have different acts on doing political sets, and he did it. Sort of just when he was starting to get famous at the Soho Theatre, and they'd forgotten to list it. So there were about 15 people in the audience, and the first two acts basically walked off and said, I can't be arsed with this. And Russell Brand, who was supposed to be doing 15 minutes, did barefoot 45 minutes to an audience of 15 people. So I've always sort of respected him since then, because the other two acts weren't by no means as famous as him. Neither of them could be arsed to entertain my 15 strong crowd, which is the only time I've done a gig that hasn't been totally sold out in my entire career. I think it's interesting to have a different perspective. I'm not sure. I mean, he's clearly not costed everything out, but then then neither had Jesus Christ. And you know, the meek inheriting the earth. What are the finances on that? Robin Hood, the founder of progressive taxation, but he hadn't thought of the long-term economic consequences of all the rich emigrating to the Cayman Islands from Nottingham.
The problem with Robin Hood as well was he stole from the rich and gave to the poor, which then just made the poor the rich, so he then had to steal from them to give back to the rich. He should have just worked out how much everyone had and then skimmed off a bit and then given that.
It's property tax, I think.
And then worked it out so it was all equal. Then he wouldn't probably act tight.
But he had tight green leggings, didn't he? And got away with it. That's all the HMRC needs to make people more enthusiastic about paying tax. Tight green leggings. It worked for Errol Flynn. It'll work for them.
And do you think UKIP are going to become the next government or be involved in the next government?
In layman's terms, I fucking hope not. It's amazing how quickly they've made transition from lunatic fringe party to lunatic mainstream party. And I don't know, I like the idea of Europe. I think, I'm 40 now, I've really enjoyed not being slaughtered to pieces in a massive pan-continental conflict. So it's been awesome. So it would be a shame if Europe really fucks things up to the extent that UKIP take over the Queen or whatever their ultimate goal is.
It's sort of weird.
She already dresses in purple sometimes, doesn't she? So.
It does show, I think, UKIP that people say, oh, there's no point in voting, there's no point in doing anything, but it's quite a minority interest party, and they've managed to put their interests right at the centre of government. So Russell Brand telling all young people not to vote because it's a waste of time. If all young people came together and voted for, young people KIP, Which they do, don't they? So it's then, you know, then that would become... Because the problem is, like, that old people vote, so democracy favours old people.
Yeah, well, this... See, I think you should be given 10 votes that you can use at any point in your life from the age of 5 upwards. And that, so you'd have to manage your democratic output. Because it just favours the old for, you know, not... They can just binge vote in their once they've retired, can't they? Well, I'm quite in favour of electoral fraud as well, because I'd go the opposite way from Russell Brand. I would encourage young people to vote as much as possible, even to the point of illegality.
Right.
Because you can't complain about apathy and about electoral fraud. It's just commitment and enthusiasm for the process for me.
It's quite easy to do. It's quite easy to do electoral fraud.
Have you ever?
I imagine
you
I haven't. But when you go to the thing, they just you give them, you tell them your name and address.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just look at the list and see who hasn't been ticked off and give that name and address, and chances are they're not going to turn up anyway.
No.
They're good for 2 to 1. You know, you get 4 or 5 in. Just go
I mean, the technology is just a pencil and a ruler, isn't it? Yeah. Crossing out people's names.
It is.
I don't know. That is not foolproof, is it?
It isn't. So as long as you know the name of a person. I got about 6 polling cards put through my door for loads of people in my street. So I could have just gone back a few times in funny moustaches. Or dresses.
You're not averse to a funny moustache, are you?
I'm not. It's been something I've done before, yeah. No, I like Europe. So I think, we're not allowed to say it. I want to be part of Europe, and it's much better. Yeah, there's me and that guy. Let's start the fuck off UK part. Let's destroy the UK. I mean, I kind of would like to destroy all countries.
Yep.
I mean not like literally, just not like just wipe them out, just have no countries.
Right. So it will make the World Cup really boring. Think of the sports fans.
All right. You make
one world utopia. I think I'm done on that. There was something else, but it's gone.
Do you have a favourite thing a terrorist has ever done? You know, it's been terrorism heavy, but my favourite thing is you were lucky this time, I only have to be lucky once, which is a great line.
Yeah.
Do you have a... You know, I know they've done a lot of bad things, terrorists, but is there a thing...
Justify.
is there anything that you admire terrorists for? I mean, Nelson Mandela is technically a terrorist, so you could choose him.
Yep. He did a lot of good stuff on
Jesus
balance.
Is a terrorist.
Jesus?
Yeah, technically.
Was he?
Well, if you believe Jesus, the Zealot book by... I've forgotten his name...
Des Lynam, was it?
Is that great guy who was on? Is the guy who was on Fox News or something with the Muslim guy? Is it? And then the Fox News are having going. How can a Muslim write about Jesus? That's not fair. Christians should be writing about Jesus because they will be balanced about it. I've forgotten his name. I apologise to him. You should buy his book, Jesus the Zealot. But that the argument is he was a kind of revolutionary and.
Terrorist.
Yeah, well, he was trying to overthrow the Romans. That's what it was all about.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Romans. There's a lot of good stuff. for me, and also I'm Jewish, so I think, you know, Jesus was quite literally banged to rights. it was Messianic in charge of a donkey, I think they got him for in the end. It was like the Al Capone of his day. But, favourite thing a terrorist ever done? I don't know. That is genuinely something I've never. I have not spent a lot of time.
I'm just trying to say, you know, they're mainly bad, but they're not necessarily all bad.
There was that tiebreak at Wimbledon in 1980, which I believe was Bjorn Borg's covert way of calling in some kind of terrorist atrocity in Mongolia, I believe. But I don't know. It depends which way. If you play it backwards, the ball on his racket in Morse code spells attack Ulaanbaatar now. Does that count?
Yes.
Oh, thanks, Richard. Excellent.
Are you ever mistaken for Andy Kaufman, the surrealist American?
No, I can genuinely say that's never ever happened. No. I don't know if he was ever mistaken for me.
No.
Or in me, because there's some people think he's still alive.
They do.
Maybe I am him. But I'm not going to say that on this podcast.
That'd be great if you were.
I'm going to wait until I've got a book out.
Okay.
And I'm going to do that. Tragedy plus time equals book deal. That's the...
It does. And how do you think podcasts are doing in the grand scheme of things? How's yours been going for you?
It's been...
You've been doing yours for 7 years.
7 years. We just had our 7th birthday.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's incredible. And we talked about it last week. The technology is, because 7 years ago, we were basically just on yogurt pots on either side of the Atlantic with a taut string, and people just had to like listen in through a wall with a glass on the wall. But now it's just all done on the internet. So it's amazing the technology. It's clearly it's the biggest grossing medium in the history of the creative arts. So it's all about the dollar now. All about the dollar.
You were always on separate continents with the Bugle. It didn't start with you.
John had gone to do the Daily Show about a year and a bit before we started the Bugle.
Yeah.
So we've done a few episodes on the same continent. But I don't know if anyone's done a kind of scientific study over whether those are funnier or less funny than when there is.
And can you see each other when you're doing it? Are you on Skype? No. Audio.
Just audio, so we can imagine. I mean, there was one where John began. He was recording in a hotel room, and began the episode by announcing that he was completely and utterly clothesless, which I found, when that was more distracting than I should have found it, I think.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't know. I think it would have been easier to have been able to Skype him to. I think that it was the thought of the nudity that was more distracting than the actual fact of it. But anyway, well, that's often the way, isn't it?
Does it make the timing of the conversations difficult to be.
What? When John is naked?
Well, or that as well.
Just the solid thud of wang on leg.
Surely 7 years ago there was a time delay between the conversations as well.
Yeah, well, the pigeons have got faster. it's pretty fast on the ISDN line, but yeah. When we do occasional episodes by phone, there is a bit of a lag, but you know, yeah. Hopefully the jokes still work. As long as it's got a more than a 5% hit rate, that's fine, isn't it?
I think we've done that today.
Yeah.
So. Just about.
Yeah. Work for that, Bruce Forsyth.
That one's brought it down to 4%. That particular joke. How are you funding that now? Because it used to be with the Times.
Yes.
And then
we were funded by Evil Murdoch money for four years, and now we're funded by listener voluntary subscriptions, which turns out doesn't raise as much money as compulsory subscriptions. Who would have thought that? But it's sort of kept us ticking over for another 3 years, so.
Does John not feel he could use some of his Daily Show millions?
Know. When he feeds his dog solid gold every day now. So
I ask people to give money. You know, you can always ask. They can get badges.
You can buy Bugle socks now as well.
Oh, can you?
The sock is the. There will always be a demand for socks. As long as people have feet. There will be socks.
Do you have any testicle-shaped ones for the people whose feet are testicles?
Legs are testicles. Not as of yet.
No,
Richard, but thanks for
alerting
me to that gap in the commercial market.
I'll ask an emergency question. I feel we need it. The emergency questions often aren't required, but they are. a slight tension from the audience. It's been going quite well, isn't there?
I could do an impression if that would help.
Okay, that will help.
Okay. I'll do my impression of Marvin Gaye. Hello, Dad. You look cross.
And that bloke in Aldershot said we didn't have any
jokes. That's right, yeah. No jokes.
How could he do that? Have you ever tried to suck your own cock?
No.
Very, very... Most people at least consider the... It makes me think you try to do it all the time, where you came back. You are a father. I'm going to be a father. So do you have any advice for me as how to... Keep a child alive.
Oh, to keep a child alive, feed it once a week minimum.
Right.
Generally, trying to hold it upright rather than by its feet.
Right.
Other than that, they're much more resilient than the newspapers would have you believe. I've managed to keep two babies alive. I'm two for two in keeping.
That's like those guys spinning plates as well.
Yeah.
It's like there's one going, then you have to rush off and do the other one.
And I am one of the most naturally incompetent people I've ever met. So, so if I can keep my children alive, I have a lot of hope for you, Richard.
Good.
But also, I think one of the great joys of parenthood is to be confronted by your own failures on an almost daily basis. So be prepared for that.
Yeah. I can do that on my own. I don't need a tiny human being to make me realise that. Okay, I'll ask you first of all, have you ever seen a ghost? I've got to ask that.
Have I ever seen a ghost?
Ghost, yeah. Not a goat, a ghost.
A ghost.
I might start asking if you ever seen a ghost.
I've not seen one. I ate one, though.
Ate a goat?
Yeah, I went to the Fat Duck, and they had one of the courses was salmon with ghost. Only Blumenthal could carry that off, I reckon, but it was a extraordinary recipe.
Have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
A Bigfoot?
Yeah.
No. I grew up in Tunbridge Wells, and there was... During the mid-80s, there was a brief infestation on the common of yeti-like creatures, but... I don't believe... it was during term time, so I didn't really get out to see it. Turned out they just later escaped Tories from the local Conservative Association.
Have you ever seen a goat?
A goat?
Yeah, in real life.
No, I've seen them in museums. It's the best place to see a goat, I believe.
Yeah. It's not gone as well, that new emergency question, as I was hoping. I'm not even going to write that down
That sounded like a kind of... curious line of questioning in some cop drama, some legal drama. Suddenly you ask me, have I ever seen a goat, was going to lead me to confessing my complicity in the Kennedy hit or something.
Often these questions, because people have never been asked that before, and so they're not prepared.
Yep.
And then it can. The Bigfoot one so far has not led to anything. But when I have a guest who has seen a Bigfoot, but submerge that memory.
Right.
Imagine how fucking great it's going to be.
It's going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I did see a Bigfoot that time, and I never thought
during those 5 years in the Himalayas when I was fleeing justice, and then you're going to get to the bottom of their hideous crime spree.
And if you could travel through time, the whole of you.
What do you mean, if?
If and when. All you'd be a very good Doctor Who.
Thanks.
You've got the hair that's probably 25% of them have. You actually you look quite like a composite of all the Doctor Whos
right.
there have ever been.
Yeah. That's, I think, the look my parents were going for when they designed me.
Certainly, the pre-new wave. The new Doctor Whos have slightly thrown.
Well, you used to be able to get a sort of fertility kit in which you would get a vial of the seed of all the actors who'd ever played Doctor Who. And so you would mix it up and you could end up with something like this.
And when you say that, presumably they've been genetically spliced together to create one semen.
No, you just have to shake it really hard.
They would all coalesce.
Yeah.
And then you would be all of the Doctor Whos.
That's why, if you ever meet a baby who was conceived during an earthquake, they look like a mixture of all kinds. Anyway, it doesn't. That didn't make any logical sense, but...
It didn't, because that sort of implies that the sperm of different men somehow got mixed together. If your baby was born conceived during an earthquake, it would just be one gigantic sperm from the same guy. There'd be a super DNA of that person. If you could travel through time, where would you go to if you could travel through time? I've just made it more... That's a more... Right. Isn't it? Rather than fingers and cocks and stuff. That's a proper question.
Right.
That people can answer.
Well, it depends where... I mean, if you go back to ancient Greece, then you're basically just getting fingers and cocks. Isn't it? So, and a little bit of philosophy chucked in. And the odd tunic. I think I probably would go... I'd go to ancient Athens, and try and introduce cricket in sort of 420 BC. Because I think that would have completed their civilization. That was all that was missing. But, I mean, if you ignore the rampant institutionalised misogyny. But apart from that, they were on the right track with a lot of things. And I think cricket would have... They wouldn't have lost it then. They'd still be... Greece would be a very different country today if they'd chosen cricket instead of naked wrestling. It's all gone downhill since then.
And how many hours a day do you spend in your shed? Which I'm fascinated by your shed.
I've already
talked to you about it backstage.
Right.
You have a shed in your garden.
I have a shed in my garden.
That you work in.
I work in.
That's what I really want more than anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's good to have a dream. It's good to aim... aim... Does not, it, not for the skies, but for the shed.
Does it double up as
also the initial version of the S Club 7 song. Reach for the shed.
Does it double up as a... potting shed, or is it just a work shed? Is it like, if you've got tools in there?
No, I have no tools in my shed. No. Just the tools of set-ups and punchlines.
Cricket, you do cricket commentaries in your shed?
I look up cricket statistics in my shed quite extensively.
Yeah.
To the point where I've become psychologically unhinged and need to see an actual human being instead of a number. But
How much time do you spend it? Because like, if you have children as well, that's a way of escaping your children, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, a child, quite clever.
The child-free shed. that as an impending father.
Yeah,
you should definitely invest in a child-free shed. It's up to 10 hours a day of shed time.
Do you have? Are you self-contained?
That's what we fought wars for, my right to sit in a shed for 10 hours. Three world wars: two hot, one cold.
If there was a nuclear war, would how long could you and the shed survive?
Yeah,
could you survive in there for?
I don't know, but I couldn't leave the shed alone in the event of a nuclear holocaust. I'd be too worried about it. I'd send my family off to the hills.
Yeah,
and I would stay and look after the shed.
Yeah,
and I'd try and lemons do away with nuclear fallout. I've heard. Squeeze a bit of lemon everywhere.
I'll give it a go.
Give it a go.
I'll bear that in mind.
Italians use a lot of lemons in cooking, and there's never been a nuclear strike on Italy. That cannot be coincidence, can it?
And have you committed any crimes recently?
I steal
every time I go into what are they called, where you drive around service stations.
Right.
It's all right. It's been going for an hour. It's hard to think of words. I steal one pick and mix from every time I go in.
Right.
That is technically and actually a crime.
Right.
I'm stealing, and I've accrued over the course of a tour thousands of pounds worth of sweets.
Right.
Because they're quite expensive. They're overly expensive, and that's why I steal them.
Including those foamy bananas.
I usually take the same thing, which is, it's like a cola bottle, but it's not. It's sort of like, tastes like chewing gum. It's sort of slightly fruity, but it's
the foam. The foam bananas are, they're like geese. They're like swans. They're technically owned by the queen. So if you steal a foamy banana, that is treason. You could be executed for that. Rightly so.
They are quite nice, but you can really only eat one of those as an adult. And then they're a bit too sweet.
Right. Well, the Queen can eat 400 in a sitting. And when she does that, she looks you absolutely straight in the eye. And at the end, she just says, capiche, and walks off. You absolutely know who is in charge of this country.
So have you done it? Because that's a crime. I've committed a crime there. And I've confessed it. Do you have any crimes you would like to confess
now? I hijacked... HMS Belfast and joyrode it down the Thames, around the British Isles, and back by the following morning. Absolutely incredible speed. Other than that, it's hard to think of any that spring to mind.
Okay, it's good to know you're law-abiding, unlike me, because it's that's no way to behave. That drives the pick and mix prices up for everyone else. Behaviour.
They're already high enough. I assassinated Jane Austen. But that was in a previous life, so I think I'm in the clear. Bolt gun to the back of the head.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how sensitive are your nipples? Where 10 is very
sensitive.
Very sensitive. So that
what are we talking? Are we talking emotionally sensitive? I mean, how do they deal with abuse?
I'm talking about physically sensitive. So if someone touches them, does that have any sensation? Or are they just useless male nubbins?
Well, how do I scale this? I mean, this is comparative, isn't it? I mean, what do I...
Well, I think you scale it by how you imagine the... Because my nipples, they were sensitive the other week because I've been running and I hadn't put any stuff on them. You've got to gel them up.
Yeah.
And so they became painful.
Right.
But it was still better than their usual state, which is nothing.
No.
Just dead. They're just dead nubbins.
Right.
But, you know, when sometimes when you touch a lady's nipple, she seems to quite like it.
Right. In the immortal words of David Frost to Richard Nixon.
So, you know, imagine at tennis when a woman's going, ooh,
right.
Ooh, what's all that about? That's as good as it gets. Well, who are you and why are you in my bedroom?
Yeah. That sounded like it was happening on a bus.
And zero is this, look.
All right. I don't know. Pi, I think. Around about
3.3. Do you envy...
They're perfectly circular as well, Mike. Which is the great irony of that.
And we're nearly finished. But I'm going to keep pushing it on. Till we get somewhere. That's quite a good question. I haven't seen this one before. What is the worst place you have been sick? That's a good emergency question. It's a good emergency question that I don't think I've ever called upon before.
Right.
The worst place. I mean, I don't know if that means like location or into. Could be like the worst town or the worst receptacle.
I was sick in Locks Bottom once.
Were you?
Yay! Yeah, just if I... Yep. There's not a lot to write home about from Locks Bottom other than, dear mum, please send new shirt. I've been sick all over it. The Queen's bedroom. Oh. But, you know,
do you know when Michael Fagan broke into the Queen's bedroom?
Yeah.
I've forgotten what I think happened now. Did he put his cock in her ear? Is that why? That's a story I heard.
I think you're mixing up with François Mitterrand, aren't you? The wily old sea dog, wasn't he?
All right, this is the question I wanted to ask you. That was quite a good one as well. When you were a kid or as an adult, do you ever have any mundane encounters with celebrities? When you were a child, did you meet any? I met Don Estelle and Ted Rogers when I was a kid. And was rude to both of them.
Well, Jeff Capes came to my to my school prize giving.
Jeff Capes, the strongman.
Strongman, yeah, legendary people. Strongman, former
Could he
top
pull
level
a bus
athlete,
with his mouth?
I think he could pull anything. He was a buff guy.
He was.
His housewives loved him. And he came to give out the prizes at my school.
Yeah.
Well, it was a bit odd to be given a prize for, you know, academic excellence by a man who had devoted his entire life to being able to pull a truck with his mouth. That was sending out very mixed messages for me. But it was pretty mundane. He just kind of shook his hand and he...
Was he as big in real life as he looked like on TV?
No, but he's about 4'8", but he stands behind a prison. Giant prison. And that's the secret of his success.
What happened to Brian Jacks?
What happened to Brian Jacks?
Yeah. Whatever happened to Brian Jacks? You're interested in sport. Do you remember Brian Jacks?
Yeah, he was the legend of the TV series Superstars.
He was.
Which I think they dug up from the TV grave recently, Superstars.
Have they?
Wasn't quite as good, but they used to have like, top-level sportsmen.
Kevin Keegan fell off his bike, didn't he?
Keegan, and they would really go for each other in
Brian Jacks could do...
He was a judo player.
Yeah.
He was the absolute... He was the Nebuchadnezzar of the squat thrust, as far as...
Does anyone know what happened to Brian Jacks? Is he still going?
Runs a judo school in Beckenham.
He runs a judo school in Beckenham.
That was said with some authority, but not totally
authority. Usually, this audience is like a Wikipedia, so you can ask them anything.
Right.
More recently, I've noticed they're getting more stupid, but that is very, very impressive, unless he's just looked it up on Wikipedia.
We should be deploying him to Syria to fight against ISIS.
Man or Brian Jacks?
Both, in tandem. Okay. He could be the hype man and Jacks could do the fighting.
I once got into trouble with Superstars because I can't remember who it was, some Yorkshire athlete or rugby player maybe, and he nearly won the whole of Superstars.
Was it Andy Ripley?
No, I don't think. I honestly can't remember his name. But he just lost in the marathon or whatever, they wouldn't be doing a marathon, but a long race. And he lost by a few seconds, so he didn't become the superstar, European superstars or whatever. And then he said, it's a damn bloody shame. And then I said that to my dad later and he hit me.
Really?
Yeah. For swearing.
Right. That's a valuable lesson, though, isn't it?
Yeah. I was just copying the man off Superstars.
Don't quote losers.
It's a damn bloody shame. Cool. It is a damn bloody shame that we have to now end.
That was beautifully done. That was like seeing a champion dressage artist.
It'd be better if
jumping
my...
from a horse onto a motorbike.
If my dad now came in and hit me across the face, that would be the perfect end. Which he would still do.
Yeah.
Does not like swearing, and rightly so.
No.
Do not swear. That's what I'll be teaching my child. Do not swear. It's fucking...
when my daughter was about... I think she was about 1.5, and she was just starting to really get into talking as a hobby. And we just overheard her sitting in her bedroom saying, "Fuck."
Fuck.
Fuck. Fuck. Fuck.
Fuck.
Clearly, a little bit of parroting going on there. It took a little while, but she got there in the end.
Ladies and gentlemen, Andy's Osmond. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Left the Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Andy Zaltzman. The music is by Pest, thanks to Orange Mark. He's made of oranges. The British Comedy Guide to Chris Evans. Not that one. No, not the politician. No, not the one. No, not Captain America one. Obviously, that would have put him much earlier if I thought you were thinking of him. The one from Wales. And everyone, Go Faster Strike. Thanks to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. It was produced by Dave Cribb. This is a Fuzz Go Faster Stripe and Sky Potato production. Thank you for listening to it. Keep listening. Hope you enjoyed watching and listening to that podcast. You can help us out by going to gofasterstripe.com/badges and buying a badge, or buying a DVD from gofasterstripe.com. Buy a tour ticket to see Lord of the Dance Settee. Check richchain.com for details if I'm coming to you. Or you can come down to the Leicester Square Theatre and see this show live, or Lord of the Dance Settee in December, if that hasn't gone away already.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.